Continuing Helen Wright's book, If Mary Baker Eddy's Manual Were Obeyed.
On this five-member board cannot fill a vacancy without the approval of the pastor emeritus. This is an estoppel. It stops or prevents an action. It specifically states a vacancy on the board can be filled only after Mrs. Eddy, the pastor emeritus, has approved the candidate. This was our leader's way of assuring that no ecclesiastical hierarchy would gain control after her passing. She continually taught, quote, "It is more in accord with Christian Science for you to unite on the basis of love and meet together in bonds of affection from unselfish motives to benefit each other and honor the cause. I strongly recommend this method alone of continuing without organization." Unquote. The dependency traits that have been forged by the false propaganda emanating from hierarchical headquarters will vanish when Christian Scientists generally become aware of the complete liberty with which Mrs. Eddy's manual endows them. It was never Mrs. Eddy's intention that a mother church or any other headquarters should govern the branch churches. They were to be completely self-governing and independent. When the manual is finally obeyed, the serenity it emanates will touch us all warmly with its harmony-bringing freedom and goodwill to mankind. But in the meantime, the sin of disobedience must be uncovered before it can be destroyed. And Miss Lenny, Mrs. Eddy points out, the consequences of trying to settle for a false, convenient peace. Quote, "Certain individuals entertain the notion that Christian Science mind healing should be two-sided and only denounce error in general, saying nothing in particular of error that is damning man. They are sticklers for a false, convenient peace. The unseen wrong to individuals in society they are too cowardly, too ignorant, or too wicked to uncover, and excuse themselves by denying that this evil exists. This mistaken way of hiding sin in order to maintain harmony has licensed evil, allowing it first to smolder and then break out in devouring flames. All that error asks is to be let alone. Ecclesiasticism, materialism today, as in the time of Jesus, would extinguish whatever denied and defied its authority and superstition. The power to do this has been increased by the apathy of some and by the zeal of others in maintaining the delusion that authoritarianism is necessary. In this delusion, they are aided by selective vision and hearing, the ability to filter out any information that cannot accommodate their stance. Mrs. Eddy's prediction of mental murder. Before Mrs. Eddy departed this realm, she extracted a promise from her secretary, Adam Dickey, as well as from others serving in her household, that if she should ever leave here, pass on, they would tell the world that she had been mentally murdered. What did she foresee? Why did she, a few days before leaving, dictate and sign the cryptic message, quote, "It took a combination of sinners that was fast to harm me," unquote. The combination that harmed her. Mrs. Eddy was a keen student of the Bible and its prophecies. She was well versed in Jesus' dire predictions to St. John, Revelation 13-20. In Science and Health, Mrs. Eddy does not comment on these chapters, since she goes straight from Revelations chapter 12 to chapter 21, finishing chapter 12 with, "The Revelator enthrones pure and undefiled religion and lifts on high only those who have washed their robes in white in obedience and suffering." Chapters 13 to 20 of Revelation describe the way of disobedience, the vials of wrath. When Mrs. Eddy was asked by a student if she had glimpsed how this prophecy of St. John would be fulfilled, she said she had, and that it was awful. Did she suddenly realize that through the disobedience of her own students, her own board of directors, these prophecies could not be averted? There is evidence that, among other things, she became fully aware of their planned disobedience to those manual bylaws, which terminated all centralized control, thus breaching each of her 13 deeds of trust. Their plan to make changes in the manual, which would nullify her God-dictated plan for the individual's total freedom under God. Their plan to authorize only what was in agreement with their policy. Their plan to remove her picture and signature from Science and Health. Their plan to rob the world of a wide distribution of her writings through legalized suppression via copyright control. Their plan to eventually attempt to separate her, the Revelator, entirely from her writings. The mental murder she foresaw resulted from the shock of fully perceiving what mortal mind was planning. This was a stunning blow she was unable to overcome. It was the shock of becoming aware of the imminent betrayal by those in whom she had vested great authority and on whom she had leaned so heavily in administering the vast, burgeoning ecclesiastical and legal activities of the cause. Those ecclesiastical and legal activities, incident to her establishing Christian Science on a worldwide basis during her final years with us. The past three-quarters of a century of Christian Science history have borne out what she foresaw. Immediately after Mrs. Eddy's passing, on December 3, 1910, an assault began on her mission. The spiritual nature and permanence of the unique leadership of Mary Baker Eddy were denied. From this, there followed a determined effort to keep the field ignorant of the history of Christian Science, and the many statements Mrs. Eddy had made regarding true church versus material organization, in which she showed her hope that the field would follow her example of going forward in spiritual organization alone. After her passing, the directors issued an open appeal in the periodicals to turn in to the archives of the Mother Church all correspondence, articles, or other records one might have. Thousands trustingly sent in their spiritual treasures, only to find afterwards these treasures were to be kept inaccessible. More will be said of the director's uneasiness about Mrs. Eddy's views on material organization under the heading Unlawful Authorizing of Literature. Uneasy lies the head that has unlawfully usurped power. Her plan for the branch churches, as well as for the individual, was spiritual government, freedom from all centralized ecclesiastical control. Christian Scientists, be a law to yourselves. From the very first edition of the manual, the branch churches were required to be self-governed. This never changed, but progressively became even stronger with the passing years. After Mrs. Eddy's passing, however, the manual terminated five-member board continued on illegally, reversing her God-dictated plan for the branch churches and individual Christian Scientists. Mrs. Eddy continually admonished her students in many different ways to tell the truth concerning the lie, that a lie left to itself is not so soon destroyed as it is with the help of truth-telling, unquote. Mrs. Eddy saw evil only as error that demanded correction. God being all and all in all, evil is never anything but God misinterpreted. Evil is some phase of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love, misinterpreted. Just as an error in math is a misconception, a miscalculation. In the realm of truth, evil is powerless, unknown. But in the human situation, it seems to have as much power as belief gives it, just as an error in any subject has power to produce wrong results, as long as that error remains hidden and uncorrected. For 3/4 of a century, the disobedience to the manual's bylaws has been producing wrong results, simply because we have not been willing to face the error, expose it, and correct it. Mrs. Eddy warned her students that error will always say, "Don't talk about me, talk about God," unquote. She urged her students to doff their timidity in handling error and become real and consecrated warriors. See Miscellaneous Writings. The Peace of Love is published, and the sword of spirit is drawn, nor will it be sheathed until truth shall reign triumphant over all the earth. My students are at the beginning of their demonstration. They have a long warfare with error in themselves and in others to finish, and they must at this stage use the sword of spirit. Unquote. Unless malpractice is exposed by Christian Scientists, she warned, the world will be little benefited by Christian Science. Many passages in Mrs. Eddy's writings show the absolute necessity of facing evil and not turning our back on it. Nowhere is this more clearly shown than in Mrs. Eddy's great work, Christ and Christmas, with which all Christian Scientists are familiar, in which the necessity of facing evil is the message of the first picture. With amazing astuteness and native spiritual sense, Mrs. Eddy foresaw, not only for her own movement, but on a global scale, evil's perversion of the great Christianity statements of the Master, such as turning the other cheek. She foresaw that evil's tendency would be to corrupt the biblical turning of the other cheek, to mean we should not face evil, should not see it for what it is and correct it. She saw how easily "bear ye one another's burdens" could be corrupted to mean "share ye one another's delusions and misconceptions." Jesus' way was also to make nothing of error, and he did this not by avoiding it, condoning, excusing it, or looking the other way, but by exposing it and facing it down. In the Christian Science Journal, Mrs. Eddy admonishes, "Love closes not our eyes to the distinction between good and bad men. It opens them wider. It blinds not just a sense of wrong, but quickens it, and stimulates a noble defense of right under all circumstances and upon all occasions." Unquote. Nowhere in Mrs. Eddy's teaching do we find any excuse for sweeping error under the rug. Rather, do we find her wholly consistent in maintaining the necessity for error's exposure and correction. This point cannot be overemphasized, as we can see from the following. Quote, "A knowledge of error and of its operations must precede that understanding of truth which destroys error, until the entire mortal material error finally disappears." Unquote. There are many other references in Mrs. Eddy's writings to the fact that evil must be seen, uncovered, and annihilated. She abhorred all hypocrisy, self-justification, or excusing of error. She said she could not teach a person who excused error or closed his eyes to evil. When someone sent her the well-known set of 3 little brass monkeys, "See no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil," she said emphatically, "That is not Christian Science. It is heathen philosophy. Christian Scientists do not close their eyes to evil, but open them. They open their eyes, spiritual discernment, and are awake to the true nature of evil, and then realize its nothingness, its utter powerlessness to control or to harm." Unquote. In Mrs. Eddy's last class, after she had dwelt on love and the importance of being love, living love, being nothing but love. Someone in the class asked if they were not to discriminate between good and evil. To this question, Mrs. Eddy responded substantially, "Ah, now you have asked me what is to me the hardest thing in Christian Science. Yes, you must see and denounce evil. The Bible tells us that Jesus was God's chosen because he loved righteousness. But the Bible does not stop there. It says, and hated iniquity. So often have I longed to see and know only love, only the good, but I have not dared. I must uncover and rebuke and hate iniquity." The plagues of Revelation descend. As already explained, Mary Baker Eddy planned brilliantly for the future of the Christian Science movement. Her manual bylaws, if they had been obeyed, would have precluded the role of the prophesied beast in the book of Revelation that rose up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns, symbols of the great elusive power of ecclesiasticism and authoritarianism, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy. Revelation 13:1. At Mrs. Eddy's passing, it was only a few, but the most trusted in the highest echelon of power, who made the final decision to disobey the church manual. This brought the plagues, as Jesus had prophesied to St. John in chapters 13 to 19 of the book of Revelation. This could not have happened, of course, if the people, as in the days of Saul, had not wanted a king to rule over them. Fortunately today, having seen the folly of putting faith in persons instead of entirely in principle, a great change is in the offing for the Christian Science movement. Today, more and more intelligent, enlightened students are choosing not to confront ecclesiasticism and authoritarianism, but are quietly turning to a totally spiritual basis in which the only thing that matters is that we obey the same divine principle and love one another from the heart. The real church has nothing to do with a building we enter on Sunday or Wednesday, but has all to do with the bonds of love, affection, and mutual respect in attaining a mind in harmony with love. This means emptying ourselves of all that springs, quote, from the sordid soil of self and matter, clearing the gardens of thought by uprooting the noxious weeds of passion, malice, envy, and strife, picking away the cold, hard pebbles of selfishness, uncovering the secrets of sin, and burnishing anew the hidden gems of love. Unquote. As we accomplish this, it will open the way for the textbook, Science and Health, to be freed from its present imprisonment by questionable copyright laws. Today, armed with a better understanding of Mary Baker Eddy's manual provisions and sufficient love for humanity to visualize and want to see all mankind freed, it will take only a few faithful to conscience to change again the course of history and turn the tide from darkness to light. The world rests on individual efforts and accomplishments. Autocratic control sought. Writing in the 1920s, Virgil O. Strickler, a prominent Christian Scientist, who at first strongly supported every action of the Christian Science Board of Directors, changed his allegiance and admitted, quote, "For 2 years or more, some of us have had a growing conviction that a spirit of domination existed in the Board of Directors, and that they were seeking to acquire an autocratic control over the Christian Science organization and its property that was entirely at variance with the expressed wishes of Mrs. Eddy. The conviction has been strengthened by the successive acts of the directors until today. There can no longer be the slightest doubt that they are seeking, by every means at their command, to acquire for themselves a domination over the Christian Science movement that is almost unbelievable, and that they intend, unless restrained, to attempt to deprive all members of the right to serve in the organization who are not entirely obedient to their personal will. Thus did evil quickly tie its wagon load of offal to the divine chariots, or seek to do so, that its vileness may be christened purity, and its darkness get consolation from borrowed scintillations. Unquote. When Mrs. Eddy, by her manual Bylaw Estoppels, terminated the five-member ecclesiastical board, she became to them, in the vernacular, public enemy number one. While remaining ostensibly sympathetic to their leader, the board began their covert character assassination of her in many subtle ways immediately after her passing. An example of this took place when the five-member ecclesiastical board took offense at something in Adam Dickey's memoirs, published posthumously by Mrs. Dickey, and sent to all Mr. Dickey's association members. The board immediately sent a letter to everyone who had received a copy, asking them to return it. The reader will recall that under the heading Mrs. Eddy's Prediction of Mental Murder, she had asked Dickey that if she should ever leave here, he would write and tell the world that she had been mentally murdered. Naturally, the board did not want this heralded abroad. The board's letter to the recipients of the Dickey book contained the following veiled insinuation of Mrs. Eddy as non compos mentis. Quote, "In estimating the purport of Mrs. Eddy's request to Adam Dickey, which Mr. Dickey recites, it is necessary to consider that she was then contending with an acute physical claim." Unquote. Further incontestable evidence of the attempt to denigrate Mrs. Eddy's character can be seen from the fact that books setting forth her true character and elaborating on her teaching are virtually banned, while books denigrating her are even reviewed in the Christian Science Monitor. However, as Mrs. Eddy herself has said, time tells all stories true. Her character and her mission to bring humanity the second coming of the Christ cannot forever be hid from the world. This character assassination of her is being done to discredit her writings. Whoever proclaims truth loudest becomes the mark for error's shafts. The archers aim at truth's mouthpiece. Unquote. Miscellaneous writings. Nothing can erase the results of her revelation, from which millions of wonderful healings resulted, many of which are on record in the Christian Science journals and sentinels in every Christian Science reading room throughout the world. In 1902, the chapter Fruitage was added to Science and Health. It contained 100 pages of testimonies of healing resulting solely from the reading of the textbook. This chapter was continuously changed. The stake and the scaffold have never silenced the messages of the Most High. Then can the present mode of attempting this, namely by slanderous falsehoods, silence truth? Unquote. Miscellaneous writings. The Mother Church as a symbol. Regarding the Mother Church, Mrs. Eddy explained, "It will speak to you of the Mother, and of your heart's offering to her through whom was revealed to you God's all power, all presence, and all science." Unquote. The Mother Church is a symbol of the great love Mrs. Eddy had for all humanity, and which we should strive to emulate. The spiritual significance of the Mother Church is that it represents the unselfed love that enabled Mary Baker Eddy to be the transparency for the second coming of the Christ. It remains as a spiritual symbol and example of what we all must attain through the evangelizing of the human self. All loyal Christian Scientists hail with joy this proposed type of universal love. Not so, however, with error, which hates the bonds and methods of truth and shudders at the freedom, might, and majesty of spirit, even the annihilating law of love." Unquote. Once the edifice was built and services were held in the Mother Church, names of members elected at quarterly meetings were read out by the first reader at the Sunday service. The first manual included 112 pages of members' names. Clearly, Mrs. Eddy deemed identification with this type of universal love something extremely precious. That membership in the Mother Church was a totally spiritual proposition can be seen from the application for membership blank, as Mrs. Eddy left it in the manual. From the first manual in 1895 to the last in 1910, the only requirement was that applicants sign under the statement, "Yours in truth and love." This meant applicant could say to all humanity, "I am yours in truth and love," for he was asking to be a member of the structure of truth and love. What higher bond of relationship could there be? The holy purpose behind Mrs. Eddy's mission was to bring peace on earth, goodwill to men, to show man his divinity. 3 years after Mrs. Eddy's departure, the application blanks for membership began becoming quite material in nature, demanding to know an applicant's church history, etc. The results of disobedience to the manual are the plagues that always attend the determination to hold spirit in the grasp of matter. For without obedience to those divinely dictated estoppel clauses, the organization quickly became an empty shell, rather than, quote, "starting fresh as from a second birth, man in the sunshine of the world's new spring shall walk transparent like some holy thing." Special note. This book does not accuse persons as such, but lays bare the carnal mind's efforts to destroy Christian Science. It must therefore of necessity show how the carnal mind uses what appears as persons in order to accomplish its purpose of destroying Christian Science by blotting out the name and even the memory of the messenger who brought this science from God. Disposal of Mrs. Eddy's Pleasant View home. Among the many indications of Antichrist activity are the following two instances which are typical of what has occurred. Shortly after Mrs. Eddy departed the human scene, her beautiful Pleasant View home, the home she loved so dearly, was torn down. Here, for 16 long years, she successfully held at bay the vicious attacks of the carnal mind. Here she won victory after victory as she valiantly carried on the monumental task of spiritualizing mankind's thinking, leading it out of bondage to material beliefs. On the site where Mrs. Eddy's home had stood, the board, around 1930, built a home for retired practitioners. But a few years later, when money was needed for the White Elephant skyscraper called the Christian Science Center, which was being built to decoy Christian Scientists away from the ongoing plan to permanently imprison science and health via unconstitutional U.S. copyright laws, Pleasant View was hastily sold for $2 million, even though an impartial appraisal had valued the property at $10 million. It was purchased for use as an insane asylum. The Christian Science field was denied any chance to buy Pleasant View, notwithstanding they had paid all expenses connected with it since Mrs. Eddy's departure. Destruction of her birthplace marker. A further attempt to wipe out all memory of Mary Baker Eddy was the dynamiting of the gift of the gigantic granite pyramid marker which stood on Mrs. Eddy's childhood home site at Bow and was a favorite tourist attraction. In obedience to orders from those in the seat of power and great authority, it was totally destroyed. Considering the above diabolical acts of destruction, which are only two of the many, what further evidence is needed by Christian Scientists loyal to Mary Baker Eddy to be convinced that the carnal mind, the Antichrist of ecclesiasticism, authoritarianism is determined to bury Mrs. Eddy and all memory of her. Alan Young has written a moving account of the pathetic exodus of the elderly practitioners from Pleasant View after the sale. It is available from Ann Beale's bookmark. Mr. Young states that her own followers and officers have begun what none of her enemies could manage, the eradication of her place and memory. The most successful way to erode a message, he states, is to eradicate the messenger. Unquote. As Science and Health plainly states, Christian Science cannot, will not, succeed in the world if the messenger who brought it is denigrated and eradicated from human thought. Manual protects branches from central control. Nothing in the manual prevented the branch churches from continuing at the time of Mrs. Eddy's passing, and the manual protected them from any control by a Boston board of directors. By her manual estoppel clauses, Mrs. Eddy specifically ended all Mother Church control. She, on the other hand, placed no restrictions on branch churches, but maintained their independence and total autonomy. Under No Interference, manual page 73, Mrs. Eddy wrote, in Christian Science, each branch church shall be distinctly democratic in its government, and no individual and no other church shall interfere with its affairs. She states, manual page 104, that the manual is to the Mother Church only. It strictly forbids any exercise of control over individual Christian Scientists or branch churches. It recognized the boundless nature of true consciousness and its divine ability to rise higher and higher from a boundless basis. As the manual is obeyed, and the student is a law unto himself. The bylaws were to prevent the dissension and rivalry which she saw were destroying the first church organization, and which she had therefore dissolved in 1889, saying, I admonish this church, after 10 years of sad experience in material bonds, to cast them off, and cast her net on the spiritual side of Christianity, to drop all material rules whereby to regulate Christ, Christianity, and adopt alone the golden rule for unification, progress, and a better example as the Mother Church. The branch churches had a prominent place in Mrs. Eddy's founding work, and should not be confused with what is said in this treatise about material organization. Nevertheless, a careful study of the manual reveals the following facts. Mrs. Eddy's manual estoppels dissolved the Mother Church. This means there were no Mother Church members after 1910. Article 23, Section 7 of the Church Manual states that a branch church can only be formed if there are still 4 members of the Mother Church to sponsor its formation. This definitely put an end to the forming of branch churches at a certain point in time, if the branch church is to remain in consonance with the Mother Church Manual. For example, in absolute obedience to the exact wording of the church manual, and not grasping at mortal mind loopholes. This was Mrs. Eddy's way of providing for the time when Christian Science Church lost all of its old ecclesiastical and ritualistic trappings, and Christian Science was recognized in every institution found elevating the race. And the group that appeared to sponsor this happy expansion from a boundless basis was the Christian Science Society, if such seemed useful and necessary for the time being. If such a society wished to hold services of an isolated religious nature, it could do so in consonance with the manual. The manual places no limits or restrictions whatever upon the formation of a society. It does, however, provide plenty of valuable illustrations of correct dealing with others. The careful reader clearly discerns that the manual requires the Mother Church and its branches to escape from their restrictive material limitations into the society where love is the sole bond. Note, at the time that Mrs. Eddy wrote in Science and Health, if you or I should appear to die, we should not be dead. She inserted into the 60th manual, the last, in 1906, quote, If the pastor emeritus, Mrs. Eddy, should relinquish her place as head or leader of the Mother Church of Christ Scientist, each branch church shall continue its present form of government in consonance with, in harmony with, in sound with, the Mother Church Manual, unquote. In consonance with is not under, but in harmony, in agreement with the manual, not the board of directors. To be in harmony with, in agreement with, the manual means to recognize the manual's estoppel clauses that terminated the ecclesiastical 5-member board of directors and all aspects of a material mother church. Mrs. Eddy wanted her students to be in consonance with the same power that caused her to write the bylaws. Every bylaw in the manual is inspired. I did not write them any more than I wrote Science and Health, she says. Because she was convinced that God dictated the bylaws containing estoppel clauses, no amount of pressure put on her by the board of directors could persuade her to change them. She stated, I have no right or desire to change what God has directed me to do, and it remains for the church to obey it. Unquote. Mrs. Eddy's warning concerning reorganization. On November 23, 1889, Mrs. Eddy wrote her students, This mother church must disorganize. Now is the time to do it. She counseled them to form no new organization, but to go forward in spiritual organization alone. Christian Science should establish science, not material organization, she declared. Almost a century ago, she stated, The hour has struck when the great need is for more of the spirit instead of the letter, and Science and Health is adapted to work this result. As stated earlier on another occasion, she said, It is more in accord with Christian Science for you to unite on the basis of love and meet together in bonds of affection, from unselfish motives and the purpose to benefit each other and honor the cause. I strongly recommend this method alone of continuing without organization. This is the true activity of a branch church. She pointed out that the fundamental principle for growth in Christian Science is spiritual formation, first, last, and always. While in human growth, material organization is first. The true branch church is in spiritual organization, love for each other. In the beginning, Mrs. Eddy had organized her students into a church as a suffer it to be so now. This filled the need for those who'd left their former church and felt a deep desire for a new church home. It also helped to centralize the work and to protect her discovery. But by 1889, she had satisfied herself that getting mortal personalities to work harmoniously together was not God's way. With unmatched courage, she therefore dismantled both church and college. Concerning this God-directed move, she writes, This measure was immediately followed by a great revival of mutual love, prosperity, and spiritual power. The history of that hour holds this true record. Adding to its ranks and influence, this spiritually organized Church of Christ Scientist in Boston still goes on. A new light broke in upon it, and more beautiful became the garments of her who bringeth good tidings, that publisheth peace. Unquote. But after 3 years of spiritual formation alone, and even though they were experiencing unprecedented prosperity, the students began a campaign to reorganize, to again organize on the old, legally chartered basis. Mrs. Eddy carefully explained to William B. Johnson, clerk of the Mother Church, If you organize again, it will ruin the prosperity of our church. Open the eyes of the church to these facts. If she again sells her prosperity for a mess of pottage, it is not my fault. Their urge to reorganize, she told them, was not of God, and only harm can come from returning to a position outgrown. Unquote. These and many other similar warnings against reorganization have been preserved by the Carpenter Foundation and in the Alice Orgain Library. To Augusta Stetson, Mrs. Eddy wrote, "Oh, how I have suffered for trying to help others avoid bad experiences." Unquote. She finally saw that perhaps only suffering would teach them God's will. Mrs. Eddy foresaw that perhaps the world must grow to the spiritual understanding of what God had revealed to her. Her policy, after her experience with the early traitors, never varied. She never explained her actions, requests, or cryptic remarks. She might have saved some students years of searching by a simple explanation, but she knew if they had to struggle to get it, they would be purified in the process. And then the knowledge they had gained would be safe in their hands and could not be used to harm her and Christian Science. As her unrestrained pouring forth all she knew to such renegades as Richard Kennedy had done. Today, with the Church of Christ Scientists' former great prosperity gone, we see how right she was in her drastic condemnation of the reorganizing of the Church in 1892. She might have said, "If all else fails, follow my directions." Mrs. Eddy knew that organization can degenerate into trials and crucifixions, into authoritarian ecclesiastical control, the development of a frozen crust of rituals, rules, regulations, dogmas, and litigation, arresting the spirit and stifling inspiration and spiritual progress. She knew, on the other hand, that the Sermon on the Mount, the Lord's Prayer, and her own science of being could not be organized. She therefore wanted the students to see, quote, "that the time has come when this church should free itself from the thraldom of man-made laws and rise into spiritual latitudes where the law of love is the only bond of union. This is the true branch church." Resolution adopted December 2, 1889. Norman Beasley writes, "Behind Mary Baker Eddy's desire for no new organization but the spiritual one was the now-reached conviction that the distractions of material organization and ceremony and personal ambition are what keep mankind from seeing the eternal truths. Her whole purpose was to design a church that would aid man in his great quest, the understanding and service of God." Unquote. Mrs. Eddy knew and stated, "Science and health, not Christian Science churches, will be the redeemer." Note, Mrs. Eddy's letters of warning against reorganizing were written between 1891 and 92. They refer to the human mind's desire to reorganize on a material, legalistic basis. Mrs. Eddy's prayer concerning setting up a church in a non-material, non-legalistic manner was answered when her lawyers found the statute that allowed her to reform the church on a non-material basis. On August 22, 1892, Mrs. Eddy wrote to Alfred Lang, treasurer of the Building Trust Fund, "The First Church of Christ, as a title, is not allowed us by the Committee on Corporations in Boston. I will not give my land to a name that sinners suggest. All that I have done or advise doing in the direction of organizing a church at this time has been at the beck of lawyers and infants in Christian Science. Now I shall deed my land today and to certain persons that I know to be seeking and finding Christ's church in their hearts, and let them use it for the benefit of Christian Science, for building thereon a church edifice in which to preach Christ's truth and to demonstrate love for one another. I shall give a sound title or deed, and this way of donating my land is just as legal as to give it to a church that must organize. God meant much when he moved me to recommend the disorganization of the church in Boston, and his terrible meaning will be fulfilled. With love to you and the other trustees." Unquote.